All right. Shall I get started?
Yeah. Our speaker is T.R. Genk, and he's going to talk about abracadabra.
Yes. So what I want to do is I want to pose this problem first, and then I want to talk a little bit about probability, and then how you actually use martingale theory to actually solve this problem. So the problem is that you have a monkey, okay, sitting in front of a typewriter, and you just the monkey just types random keys. Okay, and the question is, how long does it take a monkey typing random keys to type abracadabra? Okay, has any of you heard of this problem? Okay, has any of you seen the solution? Well, good thing you're handling the camera. okay, so. Now, there are some assumptions here, of course. The first assumption being, well, it's independent, you know, keystrokes, right? And let's say, you know, the monkey only types capital letters. So, you know, 1 out of 26 chance, you know, the monkey will type an A the first time, right? You know, things like that. So it is a very interesting problem, and it has almost nothing, doesn't mention probability, doesn't really mention martingale. The only thing that's a little probability is, you know, on average, how long does it take, right? So you have this expectation thing. Yeah.
Do you mean he types words of that length until he gets abracadabra?
No, just characters.
Just characters.
Just characters. And at some point, you was like, on average, how long does it take for you to see a string like this? Oh, hi, Aaron. That's a very cute problem, and it's very simple, but it's not easy to see or to prove it or to actually solve it. But to gain some intuition, we can start with some simple cases. Okay, for example, this is kind of a test of undergraduate probability. How long does it take the monkey to, on average, how long does it take for the monkey to type an A?
13.
So, what kind of random variable would this be? Let me close the door in case I say something wrong. Yeah, what kind of random variable is this? If I'm talking about the time it takes or the count it takes for the monkey or for this random variable to be A. What kind of random variable is this? It's a, you know, this random variable has a name. Geometric random variable, right? So this thing is geometric. One over 26, right? With the probability 1/26, the monkey types an A. With probability 25/26, the monkey types some other letter, right? So it's a geometric random variable, which means, on average, I guess I shouldn't use it because, well, let's call it T. A. Okay, the time it takes to get an A. What is this? Does any of you remember the time? You know, the expectation for a geometric random variable? The simple thing to remember is, so it's always 1 over p, so it's always 26. Okay, you know, it kind of makes sense. If it's the chance of getting the correct letter is 1 over 26, well, on average, it takes 26 times to get to the correct letter, right? Okay, so this is the easy part, which you could just get it A, right? So let's make it a little more difficult. How long does it take to get AB? You know, the monkey just types letters, you know, A, C, D, B, A, C. No, it doesn't work, right? You have to see, eventually see something like, well, B. That's a success, okay? The question is, how many keystrokes, or, you know, we can phrase it in a more human language, how long does it take to get to AB? What do you guys think? Any idea? I mean, just shout out a number. It doesn't matter. What do you think?
26 plus 25.
That's a good guess. Yeah, that's a good guess. So the first time I saw this thing, I say, okay, well, maybe I can think of it like this. Well, if it takes you know, if the chance of getting this letter is 1 over 26, or the chance of getting this letter, the next one being B, is 1 over 26, so maybe this is a geometric random variable, 1 over 26 squared, so the expectation is 26 squared. But there's a problem with that logic. And the problem with that logic is I'm really looking at all these keystrokes. So let me... as like pairs of two, right? Because I'm saying, well, am I going to get an AB here? Am I going to get an AB here? You know, if I can take a look at a geometric random variable like that, but then, well, I should get 2 times 26 squared, right? Because if I look at this as one stroke, and the one stroke is AB, to get AB, it takes 26 squared. But then how many keystrokes does it take? Well, I have to multiply that by 2. Right? But this is not right either, because, well, what if I have an AB here? Well, this is not counted in this case, right? You know, I don't have to have AB in sort of these, you know, the odd position and the even position. I can have AB in even position and odd position, right? And this is not counted here. So I'm not sure if this is the best way to do it, but eventually I came up with the way to do this, which is, well, to get to something like AB, well, so we don't know what this is, right? So what happens when we don't know something in probability? We condition. Conditioning is the soul of probability. So if you don't know something, you condition. Well, so I want to find this. Well, I don't know what this is. I have no clue. Well, let's make it easier. How do I make it easier? Well, I can make it easier by saying, well, let's condition that the first keystroke is an A. Let me write it this way. The first keystroke. Okay. So what this means is that I'm conditioning over this random variable, but then I'm taking the expectation again. Okay. If you're not familiar with expectation, this is just taking an average, right? I'm taking an average over all the possibilities. But, you know, of course, each one has different probabilities, so it's a weighted average, right? What does this mean? This means, well, I'm going to take an average, not over the whole thing, but over a subset of this thing first. What's a subset? The subset is all the possibilities conditioning on the first stroke. And then I will take the average again. Well, these two things should be the same, okay? So this is sometimes, for those of you who know, this is the power property. But in a sense, to get an expectation, you can condition it on something first, take the conditional expectation, then take the expectation again. And then you can write this out in a sort of more elementary way, which is, well, I'm going to condition on the first keystroke. And if it's not an A, times the probability that the first keystroke is not an A, plus, I know this is really bad board work, but I'm just going to do it anyway. It's an A, and it's the probability that this is an A. I hope this makes sense. Right. I'm really just conditioning on the first keystroke times the probability plus condition on the first keystroke that's actually an A times the probability of getting an A. Okay? Well, what's the probability that the first keystroke is not an A? 25 over 26, right? I'm just a monkey typing letters. So if the first keystroke is not an A, what do you think the expectation of getting AB is? The time it takes to get AB is?
1 plus
this thing, right? Because, well, if the first keystroke is an A, well, I just missed an opportunity. So it's like, well, nothing matters. I'm just going to wait for the next one. Maybe it will be something better. So this thing here should be 1 plus E of T AB. Right? You know, I wasted a keystroke. On average, how long does it take? Well, now I know I wasted a keystroke, so it's going to be 1 plus the average time to get AB, right? The other side is a little more complicated. So this is still easy. Well, the probability of getting an A is just 1 over 26, right? But this thing is a little more involved, okay? So what's the expectation the average time it takes to get AB if my first keystroke is an A. It's not immediately obvious what this should be, because getting an A is a good news. But how good is it? Well, if the next one is not a B, it doesn't do me much good, right? If the next one is C, I restart again. So in a sense, here, I'm just gonna leave it here, because I realized something, which is this expectation actually depends also on the very next keystroke. You know, not just this one, but the next one. So I'm gonna write a separate equation for this thing. Okay, what do I do? Well, I wish I knew the next one, the one after A. So I condition again. So if I condition the next one is a B, I'm gonna write this. Probability of getting AB. And then the other case is I get something else, right? So I don't know how to write it. Yeah. Do not ever use this notation. So. Okay. Sorry. I think here I only need to put a B here. Yeah. Okay. So what's the probability of the next one being a B? Well, once again, it's 1 over 26. Right. What's the, on average, how long does it take when I already got a B? What do you think?
Two,
right? I've already got a B. How long does it take to get an AB? Two. I only use two keystrokes to get to AB. This one, what's the probability of getting something other than B? Well, 25 over 26, right? On average, how long does it take if the first two keystrokes is A and something else? So this is the part where it gets a little more complicated if you think about it, because what if I get AA, right? So you know, maybe I should split this apart further, right? So I should get A plus right. And then get E of T A B given A A P of well. All right, I'm just gonna write in word, not A nor B. And this one is gonna be A, right? So instead of having 25 over 26, I have 24 over 26. Okay, and then what's going to happen if it's A and something else? Well, then nothing happens, right? Say, for example, I get AC. Well, it's not AB, so how long does it take on average to get AB? Well, in a sense, time restarts, right? So, you know, this is all wasted. So you would expect this thing to be E of TAB. Well, how many have I wasted? Well, two, right? And then over there, well, probability of getting an A is 1 over 26. And on average, how long does it take to get AB if the first keys the first two keystrokes are AA? Well, having AA is kind of the same as having, well, an A already, right? So you would have 1 plus E of TAB given A. Does it make sense? Yeah. So basically, this is good news because I have two equations and two unknowns, right? This one, you know, let's call it x. So your first equation is what? It's x equals 25 over 26, 1 plus x plus 1 over 26, and let's call this thing y. And here I have y is going to be 2 over 26 plus 24 over 26 times x plus 2 plus 1 over 26 times 1 plus y. okay? And you can solve it, okay? It turns out that, well, my intuition or your intuition is not too off. It's actually 26 squared. Yeah. So, in a sense, my original intuition is wrong, but it came out with the right number, but, you know, that's how it works, okay? The next question I want to ask is, well, then how long does it take on average to get AA? Okay, so I'm going to take a, let you think for a while, and I'm going to take a poll, okay? Tick-tock, tick-tock, time's up. Okay, so how many of you think this number here will be bigger than this number? Raise your hands if you think this number here will be bigger than 26 squared. How many of you think this number will be the same as 26 squared? How many of you, well, okay, no judgment here, okay? How many of you think this number will be smaller than 26 squared? Okay. All right, so the majority of you thinks, you know, it's going to be less than 26 squared. And most of you, well, and the rest of you, I don't know, confused. And this is really the part that's, you know, against everyone's thinking, which is this number, if you do this whole process, which you can see, this is actually simpler because it's kind of that case over there. This number is going to be 26 squared plus 26. So on average, it takes longer to get to AA than to get to AB. Okay? And it's an interesting result. And it take, you know, if you keep thinking about it, it kind of makes sense why you should get, you know, it takes longer to get to AA than to get to AB. In a sense, well, now certainly this is not something that you can easily explain it intuitively. But if, in a sense, it tells us that, well, to get a repeated pattern, it actually takes longer, right? You know, to get A and then get A again, it will take longer to from A to something else, okay? And this gives us some intuition of what's going to happen here. Okay. In a sense, if I ask you, how long does, so on average, does it take longer to get to this keystroke, the string, compared to this one? Now if I ask you again, what do you think? Which one's going to take longer on average? Abracadabra, exactly. You know, so it gives us this intuition that, well, okay, I think this thing, at least the time it takes to get to this thing, is bounded below, well, the expectation, is bounded below by 26 to the, how many letters do I have here? 11? Okay. Okay. But it doesn't help us to solve this problem. You know, but, you know, that's how I started this problem, you know, when I thought about it. So I thought I may well just present this to you, you know. Okay. So, well, I took a poll earlier, but I want to do it again because there are more people here. So how many of you have taken or have seen undergraduate probability? Okay. How many of you have seen graduate level probability? Okay. All right. How many of you, well, you, I know you, how many of you have seen this problem? Oh, good. Okay. All right. So this is a problem from a great book from David Williams, Probability with Martingales. He sort of posed this problem in the book, but never really solved it. Okay. So I guess I should introduce a few things before I delve into the details. I know Antonio talked about a few concepts in probability with you a few weeks ago, I think. But I know not all of you are here. So I will just want to briefly explain some concepts in probability. So the first one, the easiest one, well, random variable, right? What is it? Well, it's a map from sample space to state space, if you want, right? Well, if you're an analysis person, it's a measurable function, okay? Next thing, what is a probability? Well, to me, a probability is just a weight, right? If you want to average something, you put weights on it, it's a weight. If you've taken analysis, well, what is this? Well, this is a measure that assigns value from 0 to 1 to sets, okay? Okay, what's an expectation? Well, It's actually much easier to say in analysis term, actually, expectation is just integral with respect to, well, the probability measure. But if you've never done this type of thing, what's expectation? It's just average, right? You're averaging things over a certain set, but you don't average them equally. You sort of put different weights on things, and these weights are the probabilities, right? And if you when I say that this, I have sort of implied that this is discrete, right? But if you have continuous, you know, instead of putting weights, you sort of have this thing called density, right? It's kind of like a frequency, you know, how frequent will you see something like this? Okay, so that's like probability 101 here, all right? But this is what I would call this undergraduate probability. If you get to some interesting concepts in graduate level probability, the first thing you will see is conditional expectation. Okay, and we've seen this thing in, you know, these classes before, which is the simplest conditional probability. So things like, I want to make sure my notation. Okay, how do you calculate a conditional probability like this? Well, this thing is nothing but this, right? You can call this the definition of conditional probability. If you put this thing on the other, well, yeah, you can just call this the definition of conditional probability. It's pretty much equivalent to Bayes' rule. Okay. And then you can go ahead and ask yourself, well, what's the condition? What's the expectation conditioning on this thing, right? This is the sort of the simplest version of a conditional expectation. You are conditioning on an event, right? And when you condition on an event, all you have to do, you just have to add up these things. And the weights you use are going to be the conditional probabilities here, right? So that's the simplest conditional expectation. And then comes something else. It comes in something like this. What if you condition on a random variable instead of an event? So you have something like this. What is this then? Well, these things here, if you look at it, well, these are probabilities. So this, the quotient is a number, right? This thing, well, you have something times the probability, add them up. This is also a number. But this thing is actually not a number. This thing is a random variable. Because in a sense, you're conditioning on this random variable. So you eliminate, in a sense, you eliminate some uncertainties, but you still keep some left. So when you take on average, there's still uncertainties left. So this thing is not going to be a number. And the way we define it is we say, okay, let's call this thing random variable y. And I assume that, if z of omega is going to be zj. Okay, so omega means, you know, a certain state of the space. If at omega this random variable takes value zj, okay, then this thing here is how we define y of omega. Does that make sense? So we sort of define it for every omega, and omega just being some, you know, some kind of a state in our probability space. And for every omega, if this is zj, well, we go back to this usual definition here, right? And we can define this random variable y, omega by omega. And then at the end of the day, we get a random variable, right? And so this is just some kind of, a simple taste of what a conditional probability is. The most general you can go to is you can put a sigma algebra here, right? So you can say, well, for example, it could be the sigma algebra generated by this random variable, right? So what that means is just, you know, you can have something like this. You can have sets like this. Basically, the value z, the omegas are that makes z in this set B. And what's this set B? Well, this B is some set in the Borel sigma algebra. Okay, but you know, it gets too complicated, so I'm not going to worry too much about it. So this is sort of what conditional expectation is like. Okay. The next concept I want to talk about is, I think, the most important concept in probability. It's the thing that makes probability different from analysis. If you've taken graduate probability, you would say, okay, well, this thing is just analysis, right? Random variable is a measurable function. Expectation is an integral. Well, who cares about this thing? Well, the next thing is what makes probability different from analysis. And this thing is filtration. And it's a very intuitive concept. Well, what's a filtration? Filtration is information. Okay, so basically, I have, this is my beautiful calligraphic F. Let's make it discrete, so you know, something like this. So basically, it's a sequence of things. This thing is called a sigma algebra. I think you can also understand sigma algebra as information. Okay, I don't want to introduce all the definitions. You can probably find it somewhere. But it's like information. Okay, so this is the information I have at time 0. This is the information I have at time 1, and so on and so forth. Okay, and this sequence of information is what I call a filtration. Okay. I think this is a very intuitive concept because, well, you know, we learn more things as time goes on. So you would expect this to be true for every n. Okay, right? You know, tomorrow I will learn more things than today. You know, perfectly good explanation. this thing sort of keep going, but you would expect eventually this thing has to be in this. So this is, well, the big sigma algebra, right? So, you know, not very important if you've never seen this before, but every day when we do probability, we have to assume a probability space, and it comes with a sigma algebra. The way you can think about sigma algebra is just, well, the kind of sets that has a probability. Okay, so there are weird sets in the world, you know, that you can't even put a probability on it. You know, what are they like? I don't know. Well, you can construct one from some book. I can never remember these examples, but you know, you can find it. Okay. So that's what filtration is. And the next concept is, well, okay, so if you have a process, what's a process? Well, it's a sequence. You know, it doesn't have to be sequence. I'm just talking about discrete time. So it's a sequence of random variables. Okay, sequence of random variables, stochastic process, or random process, whatever you want to call it. I say this process is adapted to this filtration. If this is true, what is this up for every n? Okay. What does this mean? Well, this means, no. This is the thing I like about probability. I can explain everything without talking even like a math symbol. So this means, I guess I have to say time n. Okay. Well, on day n, I know exactly what the value of this thing is. Okay. So again, this is a sequence of random variables, right? So what I'm saying is, on day n, I should know the value of xn. Okay. Yeah, so you can think about xn as, well, I sort of do math finance, so this thing, stock price. On day n, I know the stock price of n. Do I know the stock price of xn n plus 1? Hell no. No, I wouldn't be here if I knew. Okay, so this is adapted mean, you know, what a process is adapted to a filtration means. All right, so the next concept is, well, I guess the biggest one here, martingale. So you call a process X to be a martingale I can give you the sort of the full blow of the notation, you know, something like this. Okay. Well, there are a lot of things, you know, there are, you have to be integrable, adapted, and this. I guess this is the most important thing here. So how do you understand this? Well, so this notation, well, you know, this is conditional expectation. So it's not very intuitive. But what a martingale is, it's a fair game. Okay, that's if anybody wants to ask me, how do you explain a martingale in a single sentence? Well, I can say, well, the conditional expectation of Xn with respect to this is this. Well, but that's not really explaining it. That's just reading it, right? But if you ask me, well, how do you explain this? I would say it's a fair game. Basically, if I'm a casino and you're all, you know, gamblers, you come to my casino and you play games, on average, you don't make any money and I don't make any money. That's what a martingale is, okay? It's a fair game. You know, for example, if you pay a dollar to play coins with me, you flip a coin, a fair coin, okay? If it comes up tails, well, I'm going to take your money. And if it comes up to be heads, well, so in the sense, okay, if it's a fair game, how much money should I give you?
$1?
Yeah, so I give you a dollar together with your, you know, original dollar, so I give you $2 back. Right. And if you think about it, I came in with a dollar, right? It's a fair coin, which means probability-wise, I have half, 50% to get $2, 50% to get nothing. So what's the expectation at this point? You know, you would do $2 times one half plus nothing times one half, and you get a dollar, right? So on average, you don't make any money, and I don't make any money, because you came in with a dollar, give it to me. On average, probability-wise, you should get a dollar back. Well, so on average, I don't get anything. Now, it could happen that maybe I'm lucky, so you know, you're here and I got your money, right? But if on average this thing is sort of the same, it's a martingale. Okay, so in a sense, so for a function, a constant, well, it's a constant, right? So a martingale is like the constant in stochastic process. Okay, you know, it, you know, on average, it doesn't change. Okay, so that's a martingale. Okay, how long do I have? I have about 15 minutes. Okay, so I don't want to bore you with all these details. So let me just explain how you would actually go about solving this problem. Okay. On average, how long does it take to get a string for a monkey typing, you know, randomly to get a string? Abracadabra. Okay, what can I do? I can do a thought experiment. Okay, here's how this thought experiment go. I'm going to open a casino, okay? But I'm gonna open a fair casino. So on average, I don't make any money, you don't make any money. And before the monkey types a keystroke, a gambler comes in, okay? So a gambler comes in and bet a dollar that the letter that the monkey is going to type is going to be an A. Okay? So the gambler bet a dollar. Okay. What can happen? Well, if the monkey types some other letter with probability 25 over 26, then what happens? So let me put an A here. Be careful. So what if it's not A? The gambler goes back home. Okay. If with 1 out of 26 chance that the monkey actually types an A, then let me ask you this question again. If it's a fair game, how much money should the gambler win? $26. Right? Because if you calculate the expectation here, it's going to be 26 times 1 over 26 plus 0 times 25 over 26. So you get a dollar, right? So to be a fair game, if I don't give you any money, if the letter is not an A, I should give you $26 if the letter turns out to be an A. Okay? So what happens is that I'm going to keep playing this game, and if the gambler gets $26, you know, not a very smart gambler, but the next round, he's going to put all his money into, you know, into betting. So, and the person is going to bet that the next number is going to be, well, B. Okay? So if the gambler doesn't get a B, broke. Okay? And again, the chance is 25 over 26 here. And if the gambler is super lucky, 1 out of 26, he gets a B, then how much money should we reward him or her, I guess? 26 squared. Okay, I'm going to assume from now on that women are very reasonable people. They won't do that, so I'm going to just say he, okay? Okay, all right, so $26 squared, okay? And I have this process going, so the gamblers will just gamble like this, okay? And I assume that every time before the monkey types a keystroke, a new gambler comes in. So it doesn't matter how many gamblers are still, you know, playing, a new gambler comes in. So, you know, there's a one gambler here, a new gambler here, a new gambler here, and so on and so forth. Okay? So, what's going to happen now is that, well, I'm going to close the casino if the string abracadabra is typed by the monkey. Okay? Somehow the monkey types to this, and I close the casino. Okay? So, you would expect when I close the casino, if I'm, you know, a fair casino, no such thing, but if I'm a fair casino, I should make no money and lose no money on average. Agree? Right. So let's see how much money I would make at this point. Okay. So let's call the time t. So t is going to be the time to get this. Okay. Does it make sense at time t? Like how much admission fee have I got? If you want to say like admission fee. So admission fee is, you know, how much money does it require to start the game? $1, right? And if you think about it, if the gambler loses, well, then he's going home, so he doesn't play. And if he wins, he's going to use all his winnings to play the game. So in a sense, originally he only, you know, paid $1, right? But I assumed every time the monkey types a new keystroke, a new gambler comes in and pays $1, right? So at time t, I've got like $t of admission fee. Agree? Right? So I got $t of admission fee. So this is kind of like, if you want, my revenue. Okay. Because I'm a fair casino, on average, you would expect the revenue to be equal to the cost. Right? So what's the cost? Well, when I close the casino, I close the casino when I see this thing, right? Do you see that there is a big winner? There is a jackpot winner. Well, the jackpot winner sort of came in here. And she... I wish it's just monkey coming to casino, so I don't have to do... So it would be abracadabra. So how much money will the sort of the jackpot winner get? 26 to the $11, right? Why? Because, well, you know, the winner gets $26 when an A falls, 26 squared when a B falls, 26 cubed when an R falls, 26 to the fourth when an A falls, all the way to 26 to the 11th, right? And the last time when I closed a casino, there must be, you know, a gambler that got this, because that's, you know, how I closed the casino, right? I closed it right after this string shows up. So I will have a winner that came in here that got to this point, and the jackpot winner gets 26 to the 11th. But this that jackpot winner is not the only winner, okay? This gambler also does pretty good. Why? Because, well, you know, that person is gambling Abra, right? And, you know, even though I closed the casino, didn't get even a chance to play, what does this winner get? 26 to the fourth, right? Because this gambler came in at this point. Well, A falls, 26, B falls, 26 squared, R falls, 26 cubed, and A falls again, 26 to the fourth. Does that make sense?
How could you have two people in two different spots?
Oh, yeah, because I assume every time before a monkey types a key, a gambler, you know, strolls in. So at all these points, you have a new gambler.
So like if somebody's at position two, right, which is B, right?
Here?
Like before the monkey draws the letter or whatever, types the letter,
uh-huh.
And somebody comes in at before position A,
uh-huh.
Well, if the person who's at B ends up succeeding and going to R, it's because the monkey typed a B, right? But that means the person that's at the A lost.
So there are a whole lot of strings, right? And you have abracadabra, right? So in a sense, for the person who, let's say, for this person, right? The person who's strolling sort of at this keystroke already lost, because the person bet A, right? Every one of these gamblers, they bet A, B, R, A, C, A, D, if they ever get to that point. So this person's already lost, you know. The only people who, you know, got any money back is this person, and this person. And this person, well, you know, new guy got $26. Does it make sense? Well, if you expect my casino to be a fair casino, on average, my revenue and cost should balance, right? So you would expect the expectation of T to be this number. And this number is about 3.5 quadrillion. So, you know, it takes forever, basically. you know, for a monkey to even type this. I think I remember there was a question that said, you know, how long does it take monkey to type all the Shakespeare works? You know, that would take forever, right? But you can actually prove that this thing here, doesn't matter how long the string is, on average, you would expect the time to, you know, finish is finite. Okay, so eventually, the monkey is going to type this string, all the works by Shakespeare. Okay, so now, of course, this is not a rigorous argument at all. Okay, I mean, it's a thought experiment, but I can make this argument very rigorous. Because what happens is that you can show that, well, and in a sense, I did already, because for every one of these gamblers, it's a fair game. Right, so you would expect something like this. You would expect something like this to be a martingale. What is this? This is the wealth of the jth gambler at time n. You would expect this number to be a martingale. You know, on average, it doesn't really change. Okay. If you sum all these gamblers all together. Same thing. You would expect this number, this process to be a martingale. Okay? Because if you add up a bunch of martingales, finally many of them, it's going to be a martingale. Okay? But then, what's my take on this? I'm the casino, right? Up to time n, the admission fee I got is n. The payout is mn, right? Because they come in with a dollar and they gave it to me. So they've got no money. If they have any money, I gave it to them, right? So you would expect I paid them MN, you know, at some point or, you know, altogether, right? So this is my sort of revenue minus cost, my profit. And this is only a constant. This thing only in expectation, you know, stays the same. So you would expect this thing also to be a martingale, right? And then there's some technicalities, you know, that I'm not going to talk about because they're technicalities. But then there's this thing that says, well, a martingale at a time t in expectation is going to be the same as at time zero. Okay, so the technicality here being this t is not just a fixed time, it's a stopping time. Okay, what is stopping time? It's basically, well, you know when to stop at that time. You know, if today, if I want to stop, I will stop. You know, I can't say, okay, well, you know, based on something from I foresee the future and I'm going to stop at some point. No, it doesn't work. So basically it rules out all these, you know, fantasy things and, you know, this is a stopping time. Okay, and, you know, this seems simple enough because, okay, of course you would expect a martingale to have this, you know, same expectation because that's in a sense how I define them, right? But there's some technicalities here that, you know, you actually have trouble putting a stopping time here. So this T will have to satisfy some condition. But you get this from this problem. And guess what this is? Well, this is nothing but E of, well, minus mt. At the beginning, what's my profit? Well, I haven't opened yet, so there's no money in it, right? So you would expect E of t to be E of mt if I move mt to the right-hand side, right? Once again, what's mt? Mt is the money all these gamblers have at time t. And like my argument here, at time t, well, this guy's a winner, this guy's a winner, this guy's a winner, right? Jackpot winner got 26 to the 11th. Medium winner got 26 to the 4th. And this guy got some pocket change, okay? But this is their, on average, how much money they should get. And this should also be, on average, how long it would take for this string to appear, okay? So I'm almost out of time, but as you can see here that this is a pretty cool way of solving a problem. You know, the first time I saw this problem, I was like, well, you know, I've never seen anything like this. You kind of conduct a thought experiment. Of course, I've left out a lot of technicalities here, but you conduct this experiment, and you can actually, you sort of manage to equate the time it takes to get something with, well, the winning of something, right? And that's this whole martingale thing is about. At the end of the day, it's a fair game. So a lot of the times to get something else, like the, here, time, if I manage to create a game and somehow show that this thing is a martingale and using all the properties of martingale, I can actually calculate the expectation of the time it takes to do something to be the expectation of a winning of something. And then I can easily get to something like this. Not easily, but you get to something like this. I think I'm out of time. I've got a couple of minutes. Well, I will leave it to questions then.
Why does that end up being UI? Because that gets bad in like a random walk. So why does that work out?
UI?
Yeah, like the so plug, I mean applying like options
copy. Right. So okay. So here's the person who took graduated probability question, okay. So this thing is a UI. So one of the there are two conditions that you know, to do this. First, you have to show this is finite.
Yeah.
Second, you have to show that this thing.
Oh, you use that. Okay, fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is pretty easy to see, right? Because this thing is bounded by like you know, 26 to the 11th plus times a few something, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you do use this, right? So you know this is. Yeah. It's actually proving this thing that takes a little while. It's not obvious. And this thing is just, you know, for those of you who have seen this type of things before, this is very different from this. Okay? To get this is actually pretty easy. You can do something like Borel-Cantelli to prove this is true. But having this does not necessarily mean this. Okay? A very typical example is that if you have a symmetric random walk, okay, so it goes up by 1. Well, let me put a 1 here. You start with at 0, you go up by 1 and go down by 1 with probability 1/2. And you just, you know, random walking, okay? And then you say, well, let me define this, you know, stopping time to be the first time I get to 1. Okay? You know, if I got to 1 here, t is 1. If I do this, and then maybe this, and then this, well, then the stopping time, the t is 3, right? So if I define such a stopping time, well, if you look at xt n, okay, so this is a stop version of this process. What it means is I'm going to stop, you know, at the minimum of n or capital T. This thing here is what? Well, if I if this is a stopping time, which I claim it is, then, well, you can use, well, you can use the fact that if you have a martingale, a stopped martingale is also a martingale, you know, things like that to show that this is actually zero, okay? It's not too hard to show that this thing is true. But if you think about it, if I try to do something like this, what is this? At time t, well, this is what it means, right? You know, this is the sort of the first time I get to 1. Well, then at t, I should be at 1, right? But this is not the same as E of x 0. Right? So you say, well, optional sampling is wrong. That thing doesn't hold. Why? Well, because this condition doesn't satisfy. Okay. This is just for those of you who have seen this before, you have to use this carefully. Okay. In a sense, so if you put n here, like any fixed time, if you're a martingale, this thing is always true by definition. Okay. But if you put some kind of randomness here, if you say, okay, I can't really tell if this thing is going to, when I'm going to stop until I come to that day, some kind of randomness in here, then to actually get to this equation, you need some assumptions on, the stopping time. And you can either put a lot of assumptions on the stopping time, or you can put a lot of assumptions on, well, x, right? For example, if you assume x is uniformly integrable martingale in the first place, then you don't even need this condition. And this condition, this and this, is sort of a mix of these two that works well in this case. Okay? Well, thank you very much if that's the only question.
Pizza's upstairs on the 12th floor.